Corellian blockade, inner exclusion zone.
It was a long sortie. For the next 3 hours, the squadron harried supply vessels and transports, turning some of them back simply by flying uncomfortably close. Others were more persistent. It took a concussion round detonated close to their bows to make them alter their course and head back down to the surface. For once, the XJ-7's business was about being visible, conspicuous, and intimidating.
"We only have to keep this up for a few months," Zek said wearily. "Piece of cake."
"Try this for size," said Jaina. "Check your scanner. 3 assault fighters on our 6. I think Cousin Thraken is fed up with us already."
Jason looped his XJ-7 into a climb, tracing a complete arc almost without thinking about the maneuver, and found himself looking up through his canopy at the approaching Corellian fighters as they crossed beneath him. Even with G-forces normalized and no sense of orientation, Jason still had a clear sense that he was above them, upside down, just like flying combat missions in a planet's atmosphere. He could see and feel Jaina, and see Zek flying wide of him far below, canopies facing him. They had looped in the same plane to come up on the Corellians from the rear, rather than climbing above them. He accelerated into the loop to drop down behind the 3 fighters, right himself, and skim at top speed just meters clear of their canopies. The 3 fighters broke formation and scattered. Without any verbal commands, the 3 Jedi pilots latched on to their individual targets, Jaina and Zek close enough on the tails of theirs to show little eddies of ionized gas on the nose shields of their X-wings. Jason's target seemed to be under the impression that he was chasing Jason. Corellians were excellent pilots, but they weren't Jedi. The marginal difference in reaction speed and orientation made for much bigger gulfs in performance at high speeds. Jason seized that advantage. He let the fighter sit close on his tail for a couple of kilometers, and then plummeted away from it, perfectly aware of his own position in space relative both to it and to Jaina and Zek, who were also locked in their respective games of tag. It was just sparring. This was a game of brinkmanship, a game of maneuver and countermaneuver to test each other's nerves, a game to show that if it came to a shooting match, the Alliance would win. Jason thought this right up to the time he saw the display on his screen blip red, with the warning that the Corellian had a missile lock on him. He sensed anything but a bluff. "You're really going to shoot, aren't you?" The Corellian fired. Jason didn't feel in danger. He had deflectors, the XJ-7's robust airframe, and his own skills. He also had chaff to deploy. Instinctively, he fired the small decoy in his wake, and it fragmented into pieces that looked to a missile very much like a target. But if you want to fight, you found one. The missile exploded on his tail, and the rain of fragments peppered his hull. The Corellian fighter was still hard behind him, and now he meant business. Jason also knew his opponent would aim the next missile manually, overriding its smart guidance to thwart more chaff. Jason flipped the XJ-7 90 degrees and shot up vertically as the Corellian disappeared beneath him and overshot. Jason was back on his tail, staring into white engine halos and closing the gap until he was close enough to fire the laser cannon. The starfighter exploded in a ball of white light. A few hours into the blockade, the shooting had already started.
"Congratulations."
Jaina's voice over the comlink was flat and unemotional, although she didn't feel that way in the Force at all. Jason sensed her as resigned.
"You've made the history books. You fired the opening shot of the real war."
Slave 1, entering Corellian exclusion zone, outer cordon.
"Warship Ocean calling unidentified vessel," said the Alliance.
Fett listened in silence. Slave 1's scanner profile presenting the almost undetectable thermal and magnetic signatures of a speeder bike. He was, for all intents and purposes, invisible. Unless someone was lucky enough to get a visual on him.
"Identify yourself." "This is Mandalorian vessel Baroia."
Baveen's voice oozed cheery comradeship.
"Need a hand?" "Why would we need that, Baroia? We've got 2 fleets deployed here." "You weren't that choosy when you needed us to fight the Yuuzhan Vong."
Fett prepared for a maneuver that would either get him through the blockade in one piece, or solve all his worries about terminal illness. Because if he miscalculated, he'd be vaporized along with Slave 1. and so would Mirta Gave, of course.
Do it,
Mirta whispered.
Wait,
said Fett, fingers resting on the recessed pad that would punch Slave One into hyperspace.
Just making sure the trajectory is clear.
There was a moment's pause from Ocean. He heard the comm officer swallow.
Since when has Mandalore been a part of the Alliance? You planning to bill us for this?
Just being comradely,
said Bavine.
But strictly speaking, we couldn't be a part of any Alliance if we wanted to, because...
Nice diversion, thought Fett. If Bavine started on his theory of Mandalorian statehood, Ocean's comm officer could be pinned down for days. It was now or never.
Now!
He hit the hyperspace jump control once, and hit it again almost a heartbeat later. In a second, Slave One accelerated from a few thousand kilometers per hour to half the speed of light, and then decelerated again. Fett's stomach felt as if it had detached from his body. It was the equivalent of slamming the ship into a rock face, but it punched Slave One past the blockade fast enough to show up on a scanner as nothing more than a brief burst of energy. The huge forces made Slave One shudder and groan, and Fett found the surface of Corellia looming in his view screen. They were over Coronet. Fett recognized the city. The big park that was split in two by the speeder highway hadn't changed.
Coronet ATC to unidentified fire spray. I have you on visual. You're a little big for a speeder bike, aren't you?
Slave One here,
said Fett.
Your scanner must be having problems.
Just can't get the maintenance staff these days. You're cleared to land in the priority base. Follow the red lights.
It's nice to feel welcome.
President Sal Solo is sending a speeder for you.
Slave One settled on her dampers, and Mirta let out a breath loud enough for Fett to hear. But he never allowed himself that degree of relief. One danger had passed, and now he simply moved on to the next one, holding Sal Solo at arm's length, getting off Corellia again, finding that clone, and getting him to surrender his secrets.
Come on. Help me secure the ship. I don't trust Sal Solo any farther than I can spit.
You're letting me come with you?
I'm not letting you sit in Slave One for a few days.
Fett set the intruder countermeasures, this time including the self-destruct.
Just do as I tell you.
Is that because I'm useful, or because you want to keep an eye on me?
Because I don't want to have to hunt you down and shoot you before you tell me what happened to my wife.
He wasn't sure if he said it to shock or because he meant it. He didn't have to care either way.
I didn't love her. I just didn't know how to be part of a family.
Fett didn't let Mirta see all the codes that turned Slave One into a booby trap for anyone insane enough to try breaking into her. But the girl learned the basic routines fast. By the time they climbed out of the forward hatch, there was an airspeeder waiting on the permacrete strip, and three men in business suits standing in front of it with hopeful expressions. A Corellian stepped forward, dark-haired, young, but with an air of being well into middle age, and held out his hand for a few awkward seconds before realizing Fett wasn't about to shake it.
Welcome to Coronet, sir, he said. We represent the three main political parties of the Corellian Assembly. We hope you'll be able to help us.
So Sal Solo had sent his minions. Okay, that was understandable. Fett checked his weapon status in his HUD, just in case things didn't go quite as planned, shoved Mirta in the back of the speeder, and then sat up front with the driver. That appeared to surprise his welcoming committee.
I'm Dur Gedjin, by the way, said the young old Corellian, commendably unfazed. It's very good to meet you.
Gedjin would be trouble. Fett could feel it.
Senate Building, Day 3 of the Corellian Blockade.
An ocean of people, perhaps half a million, churned and surged around in the plaza in front of the Senate Building. Jason could see a very long line of hundreds of blue-uniformed CSF officers with riot shields and visors pulled down, forming a defensive barrier across the face of the building. It was a protest, not exactly a mass riot, given the population of Galactic City. But it wasn't a welcoming committee for the heroes of the blockade, either. Judging by the position of the police lines, there appeared to be two hostile factions yelling abuse at each other. Coruscanti versus the pro-Corellian lobby. Coruscant and the Galactic Alliance were indivisible.
Jason could hear a chant taken up by thousands of voices.
The Empire's back! The Empire's back! The Empire's back!
It was hard to tell, but Jason assumed it was a taunt from the dissidents and not Coruscanti enjoying the prospect of firm government. But his exploits had gone down very well in the Alliance's heartland. He kept an eye on HNE and the news holozines.
Pity I couldn't stay in the front line, said Niathal. That's the worst thing about command. Anchors you to a desk.
I'll remain hands-on as long as I can, said Jason. I'd like to show my face on the blockade line. Good for morale.
You have an office in mind, then?
Don't worry. Not yours. As Niathal's staff airspeeder slowed to skirt the crowd, Jason glanced out the window and noted the new mix of species and allegiances forming the army of protesters. Well, we rounded up the Corellians, and now their places are being filled by others. He identified various nationalities by clothing, hairstyles, snatches of language. Look, isn't that a couple of Rhodians? The closer to the lobby that the speeder edged, the uglier the mood of the crowd appeared to become. A group of CSF officers drove back the crowd with none too gentle shoves, emphasized with batons to let the speeder through. Jason and Niathal got out and took the precaution of throwing up a force shield around them. Jason almost didn't feel danger now, not in the sense that he always had. He merely took account of circumstances and reacted accordingly. Jason turned and stepped forward into the crowd. He didn't enjoy displaying his force powers in such a vulgar way, but there were times when they could make a point. He held his hands a little away from his sides, closed his eyes, and pressed outward in his mind, as if lifting his arms. Nothing violent mustn't cause a crush or stampede. Innocent people would be hurt. The crowd closest to him fell back a few paces, some of them looking around frantically to see what was pushing them back. A breathless silence spread from the line nearest to him, like a fast tide engulfing a shore. Even some of the CSF officers seemed frozen to the spot. Everyone knew about Jedi, but very few ever saw them in action, or felt them.
Go home, said Jason. Just break it up and go home before I have to do something about it.
They didn't run, of course, but he had made his point.
The respite gave the CSF line a chance to push the rival groups apart again, and Jason followed Niathal into the Senate building and up to the Chief of State's office. Luke Skywalker was already there, Mara sitting beside him, and he didn't look pleased to see Jason.
We are still not at war,
Omis insisted, staring out the window at the crowds.
Does the Council still support the blockade?
As the only alternative to full-scale war or backing down on disarmament, yes.
Luke wasn't looking at Omis. His gaze was on Jason.
How much impact is the blockade having?
Niathal looked up from her datapad.
We've intercepted or turned back around 70% of vessels trying to enter or leave the two exclusion rings. But in terms of volume of cargo and personnel, that's near 90%. We're stopping the big vessels, but losing some of the small ones. All in all, it's biting already.
Should we revise our policy on stopping traffic movements around the shipyards? Non-violent way of leaning on the civilian population, said Jason. When Dad doesn't come home when he's due back from the yards, it focuses families, and families lean on governments.
Luke stood up and watched from the window with Omis.
And what about these people, Jason? You've cracked down on the Corellians. What about all the non-Corellians I see down there?
Mara gave Jason a careful don't-take-the-bait look.
If any other national group or species threatens the security of Coruscant or the Alliance, then I'll deal with that, too.
Within the law?
Yes, within the law.
I realize you don't approve of my methods, but someone has to carry out the damage limitation.
We've had a dozen terrorist incidents in a few weeks, Luke said. I'm sorry that lives have been lost, but we need to get that in perspective when it comes to how we treat billions.
That got Omis's attention. He turned from the window.
I invite you to tell the Coruscant public that, Master Skywalker. The fact that they won't see it that way is why terrorism is always so effective. and the Senate doesn't see it that way either. The Security and Intelligence Council now has full emergency powers to take operational decisions on the handling of public safety.
Luke stood his ground. I'm still uncomfortable with the armed forces being used against civilians. Define a civilian with a blaster who doesn't like the government then, said Jason. The legitimate government has taken the decision. Luke's tone was even and controlled. I'm just dissenting. And as the members of the Jedi Council aren't the elected representatives of the people, then an opinion is all that it is. Nyathol was watching the exchange with faint interest.
This is an exquisite ethical argument, but right now I'm more concerned with stopping Corellia repairing an orbital weapon that was capable of taking out the Yuuzhan Vong, and that will, if brought back online, ruin the Alliance's entire day.
Omis almost twitched.
What would you prefer to do, Admiral? We failed to destroy it last time.
We can reduce the planet to molten slag from orbit. Let's not rule out the possibility of needing to do that to Centerpoint, even if it would be best preserved to defend the Alliance.
It's populated, said Luke.
So are warships.
Omis interrupted, looking at his chrono.
I don't think this takes us any farther forward. I have a delegation from the Corporate Sector Authority coming to see me soon.
Jason took the unspoken instruction to leave, and Nyathol followed him. As Nyathol peeled off to go to her state office, Luke caught Jason's arm. Just a brief touch, nothing more. But Jason sensed him flinch as if he'd had an electric shock. Have you got 5 minutes, Jason? Luke indicated a side room. Jason smiled. Ah, we all fall into corporate euphemisms fast, don't we? Sorry? It's code for come in here and let me read you the riot act, isn't it? It's code for we want to talk to you about Ben in private. Jason inclined his head politely and suppressed his detectable feelings further so that he presented quiet bewilderment to Luke and Mara. The doors of the side room closed behind them. Where is Ben? Luke asked. Captain Shivu is keeping an eye on him at the barracks. Mara spoke for the first time. Jason, Luke's worried about Ben going on these raids with you. He's perfectly safe. Safer than when you sent him to attack Centerpoint with me. Actually, it's not his physical well-being that concerns me the most, said Luke. I'm worried that instead of being taught to use his force skills for good, he's using them to bust down doors and round up civilians. It all depends on your definition of good, doesn't it? I want Ben to go to the academy and get himself straightened out for a while. Normally, I'd say that's your decision to make as his father, but he's a Jedi, and he has a job to do at which he's actually very good, identifying threats. He's 13 years old, for goodness sake. And you thought that was old enough to send him on a commando raid. I hate to question your logic, Uncle, but this isn't making sense to me. Go on, say it. Tell me that you think I'm turning to the dark side. That's what you think, isn't it? Let's have it out in the open. Accuse me. He isn't using violence. Why is it okay for Jaina, Zek, and me to fly combat missions that end in the deaths of other pilots, but it's not all right for Ben to find terrorists and help arrest them? Luke pinched the bridge of his nose. Mara's face was ashen. She looked drawn and strained. Jason decided to make his move. I don't want to put you on the spot, Mara, but do you agree with this? I think we need to talk this through with Ben, she said carefully. He settled down well, and I think we need to discuss this when we're not so tired and irritable. Actually, no, said Luke. I think there's something that needs to be said right now. Jason, you need to know that Lumaya is on Coruscant. You know who Lumaya is, don't you? It took all of Jason's control to maintain his facade of ignorance and use the past tense, relegating her to history. Yes, she was a dark Jedi. She's back. She's here. I had terrible force dreams about a hooded figure threatening us all, and then I felt her somewhere, near. Jason thought, look patient, as if you're humoring him, then said, what's this got to do with Ben? I don't know yet, but I feel it has everything to do with Ben. Don't put it past Lumaya to engineer events to serve her purposes. Okay. Jason feigned a half smile as if embarrassed. I'll be on my guard.
Galactic Alliance Guard HQ, Quadrant A-89, Galactic City.
More rioting had broken out in one of the commercial zones, and a couple of the GAG intelligence officers were poring over images being relayed back to them via helmet cams worn by CSF riot squads. Ben watched them for a while, trying to learn how they recognized faces and tracked the movements of what they called persons of interest around the city. When a Jedi relied on his force senses, he never learned how to do the thinking that regular people had to do to solve problems. Jason always reminded him about that, telling him not to let his brain rust just because he had force powers. Ben, Shivu leaned around the open doors.
Colonel Solo's back. Report to him in the cell block.
Yes, sir.
Ben found himself marching down to the cell block, which happened to be the fastest and most dignified way to move without breaking into a run. He found Jason with Captain Gurdon, having one of those hissed closed quarters conversations that showed they were angry with each other. The words results and unacceptable drifted toward him. Jason stopped and motioned Ben forward with a crooked finger. Gurdon was clearly dismissed for the time being.
I saw the news, said Ben. Nice shooting.
Shooting's never nice.
Then Jason switched from annoyed to benign in an instant.
But sometimes necessary. Look, your parents want to see you. Will you do the diplomatic thing and visit them?
Dad's mad at me, isn't he?
He's worried about you, and he needs some reassurance that I'm not teaching you bad ways.
Jason put his hand on Ben's shoulder. He'd rather I wasn't teaching you at all, but your mother is okay with it. In the end, I can't make him or you do anything, but for what it's worth, try not to have a fight with him.
Ben heard the meaning clearly enough. He'd be sent to the academy.
Okay, he said, filled with dread. I'll visit tonight.
Now, let's see what Aelin Haber has to say for herself.
The bounty hunter had been in custody for nearly a week, and this was the first time Ben had seen her since Shivu had questioned her. She hadn't been a glamorous woman to start with, but she looked terrible now. Gurdon didn't appear to have taken good care of her in Shivu's absence. There were bruises on her face. She was leaning forward, arms braced on the table, breathing with some effort.
I really need to know who you were sent to kill, said Jason, reasonable and earnest.
He sat down at the other side of the table and indicated to Ben to take a seat near the doors.
Was it Chief Omis?
I'm just a debt collector.
Haber wasn't quite as defiant as she had been a few days earlier, but she wasn't cracking either.
Don't let the blasters fool you.
If you've come to Coruscant, you're looking for a high-value alliance target.
You've got all you're going to get out of me. Can I call a lawyer now?
Suddenly, Haber's head slammed down on the table without warning. Ben flinched at the loud crack. Jason hadn't lifted a finger. Haber pulled herself upright again, blood trickling down her chin. She looked more surprised than hurt, although she appeared to have broken a tooth.
Nice trick, Jedi boy.
I've got plenty of those.
I'll bet.
Let's try again. Was Omis your target? And who else is working with you?
Ben still didn't believe what he'd seen. He believed it the next moment when Jason used the force to crack her head on the table again.
Jason,
said Ben.
This wasn't right, and it wasn't Jason. Jason, should you...
Later.
Jason glanced back at Ben, startled as if he'd suddenly remembered he was in the room.
Go and wait outside.
Ben realized he should have waited a long way from the interrogation room where he couldn't hear anything, but he felt he had to stay close, as if distancing himself too much would have somehow allowed Jason to do worse things than he was already doing. Ben took out his lightsaber and stared at the hilt, trying not to listen to the interrogation. He heard things he knew no kid should have heard, but still, he couldn't walk away. He sat there for an hour, then two, staring at his hands, hearing the raised voices and the thuds and occasional cries of pain. And then only Jason's voice repeating the same question over and over again. Who sent you? And who were you sent to kill? Gurdon and Shivu appeared at the double doors at the end of the corridor and took one look at Ben before walking briskly to the interrogation room.
Jason's in there,
Ben said weakly.
Oh boy,
Shivu nudged Gurdon. Come on, we can't let this go on.
He's the commander.
Done, you moron. He's going to kill her. That's not how we do things.
It's how we did things.
Really? Not on my criffing watch.
Shivu appeared to have lost his cool. Ben watched, not wanting to stop them because he knew deep down that he should have stopped Jason somehow. Shivu overrode the lock and Ben tried hard not to look inside the cell.
Medic! Get a medic, someone!
Jason snapped at Shivu to get out, but Gurdon bundled in behind him and the two officers laid Haber flat on the floor and tried to revive her mouth to mouth. Ben watched as they took turns pumping her chest, hand on fist, checking her breathing and pressing fingers on her throat to try to find a pulse. Jason stood back.
Where's the criffing medic?
Shivu demanded. Gurdon felt her neck, then her wrist.
No pulse.
Ben, call the medic!
Gurdon shook his head.
Too late. She's gone.
Ben stared in horror. Haber looked terrible. He'd never seen a dead person before. Not like that. Not with his own cousin standing over her, as if it was just a little inconvenient for her to die before she'd answered his questions.
What were you thinking, sir? We can't handle prisoners like this. You've got to report it. If you don't...
I've entered people's minds before, and they've always been fine afterward, said Jason. We have to know who she was working with. Shivu stood his ground. He didn't seem in awe of Jason at all.
You should have left this to me, sir.
Time is critical in assassination attempts. They could be out there now.
I know that, and I also know that you don't let prisoners die during questioning. I have to report this.
You report it then, Captain. But right now, I have to find out who she was after, and my only lead is some woman called Myrta Gave.
There's the Corellian agent, sir,
Gurdon said, straightening up.
He doesn't know who Haber was after. Only the Corellian intelligence told him to give her a safe house and provide weapons.
Jason looked through Shivu as if he weren't there.
Get working on him, Gurdon, just in case.
I have to do something.
Ben couldn't bear to think of someone else dying like that woman had. He had an idea. Worked through the information again, just like the ex-CSF men had told him.
Can I see the datapad, please?
Ben fought to stay calm. He had moved from disbelief to shock. He didn't know why Jason had done what he did, but he had to have a reason. Jason handed him the datapad, suddenly all reason and concern.
You sure you're all right, Ben?
I just never saw a dead body like that before.
Ben took the datapad and retreated to the nearest empty room. It was the cleaning droid station. He settled down on an upturned bucket and tried to look through the data in a sensible and rational way. But it was hard when you'd seen your hero do something terrible. He flicked through the images in the datapad, hundreds of them, and they were all pictures of vessels, just as Shivu had said. He had to scroll through them a number of times before the idea that was nagging away at the back of his mind suddenly became clear, and he spotted what was in a lot of the pictures. Not everyone, but most of them. Sometimes it was just a detail, and sometimes it was almost half the ship, but it was the same class of ship. It was a YT-1300, an old Corellian transport model that was still a common sight around the core worlds. They ran forever. Uncle Han's Falcon seemed ready to run for eternity. Ben had a flash of insight. Ben trotted down the corridor and approached Jason cautiously, hoping that he was right, and hoping that the information might save the Corellian agent from Gurdon.
She was after Uncle Han, Jason.
Ben handed back the datapad.
That's the ship they were doing surveillance on. It's in more than half of the images. They thought he was still here. She was looking for the Falcon.
Corellian Assembly Building, Coronet, Office of the Corellian President.
It was an awfully big office, and offices that big usually meant small-minded men occupied them. Fett remained dismayed by the ease with which the likes of Thrak and Sal Solo bounced back from disgrace and even treason charges to hold high office again and again. The galaxy was a moral cesspit. It got what it deserved.
You beat the blockade, then, said Sal Solo,
leaning back in his splendid Apakia chair and holding court in front of the opposition party representatives. He smiled charmingly at Myrta, who didn't smile back.
How would you like to work for Corellia?
specify your requirements regarding Centerpoint.
The Alliance sabotaged it, but I'm embarking on repairs and it should be fully operational in a few months. Once it's online, the Alliance won't be able to make us disarm. Ever.
Then why do you need Mandalorian assistance?
Repair crews haven't been able to land on the station.
Try recruiting on Nar Shaddaa. You need smugglers to run blockades, not soldiers.
But when we do land crews, we'll need someone to defend the station. It's the Alliance's prime target.
How much?
Sal Solo's eyes flickered, as if he had to look to his colleagues for some mandate, but was deeply unhappy about being seen to do so.
1 million credits.
Per man?
Yes.
Per month?
That's a ludicrous figure.
It's dangerous work.
I was thinking of a flat fee. It's only gonna take a few months.
We don't do open-ended contracts. Months and into years are construction projects.
Fett really didn't want the work at all, and he knew the commandos didn't.
And no start date yet. Call me again when you put a crew on the station and we'll talk. But it's 1 million per man and per month.
How many men?
That thing's bigger than the Death Star. 100 at least.
Fett watched Sal Solo's face fall ever so slightly. Two of the other three politicians looked grim. The third, Gedgen, seemed perfectly happy. Maybe he knew something about Corellia's budget that they didn't.
I hope you didn't mind my dragging you all this way for such a brief meeting, said Sal Solo, still directing the occasional insincere smile at Myrta. I'll be in touch.
Always worth visiting Corellia, said Fett. I might stay a few days. Got time to show me around?
Shall I do the honors, Mr. President? Gedgen offered. Fett beckoned to Myrta, who walked behind them with sullen disinterest, as Gedgen showed Fett the fine staterooms and the offices. I realize you're a busy man, Fett, said Gedgen, but may I make a proposal? Our president doesn't enjoy our full confidence. Would you remove him for us?
How permanent?
Totally.
Who's paying?
All the opposition parties. Together we can outvote the Centerpoint party, and without Sal Solo, they can be quite sensible. Fett considered the contract. Timing was the issue. He wanted to pursue Kosai's data as soon as he could.
And after you see your daughter, last time you saw her, she was too young to talk.
When?
Gedgen handed him a tiny data chip. When can you complete the task?
When I've checked you out.
Fett tapped the datapad link on his forearm. Yes, the chip was valid.
1 million.
You people deal in round numbers.
I could make it 3 million. Yes or no?
Yes. Gedgen tapped his own datapad. There, 500,000 up front. Balance on completion. Can we offer you a room? A speeder back to your ship?
It's a nice day. I'll walk.
Skywalker's apartment, Galactic City.
The apartment doors opened before Ben could press the entry key. Luke felt him coming, a turmoil of emotions in the Force.
No need to look so scared, said Mara.
She took Ben's shoulders and steered him into the living room.
We're just worried about you, that's all.
She sat him down and gave Luke a warning glance as he walked into the room to attempt to pull his son back from the brink.
Are you okay, Ben?
Yes, Dad.
I'm not angry with you.
Luke pulled up a chair.
But we see the kind of things Jason is doing lately, and we wonder if you should be a part of it.
Ben just stared back at him. Luke had seen that expression on children's faces before, but they had been refugees. Children from war zones, who had to grow up faster than was reasonable or decent, who never went back to being carefree kids again.
I'm learning a lot, said Ben.
I'm not sure if it's the kind of thing you ought to be learning.
Why, sir?
Ben had always called him Dad. Suddenly, he had become Sir. Luke caught Mara's reaction, a little mental flinch beneath the reassuring smile that seemed set in place.
It's violent, Ben.
Ben swallowed.
Jedi do violent things. We fly starfighters with laser cannons.
We use lightsabers. How many people did you kill when you fought the Empire?
Luke was stopped in his tracks.
I killed a lot of people, he said.
And so did I, said Mara pointedly. And I was on the other side.
Ben looked as if he was measuring his words.
But I haven't killed anyone. I know I've saved a couple of lives in the last few weeks. Just because it looks bad, it doesn't mean it is bad.
Luke had no answer. Mara caught his eye.
Ben, how would you feel if I asked you to go to the academy for a while?
Luke asked.
Now?
Luke had expected an instant eruption of indignation, not merely a one-word question.
I'd thought that, yes.
Ben looked down again, an echo of Jason.
Are you going to make me?
I'd rather not.
Then I'd like to carry on with the guard a bit longer. There are things I need to understand before I study again. Things I can't work out at any academy.
Luke's force sense told him that Ben meant exactly what he was saying. He wasn't playing for time or manipulating the situation.
Okay, son,
said Luke.
We'll talk about it later.
Kevin Park, Coronet Corellia.
He's gonna have your wife and kids killed. That's all you need to know.
Han Solo wasn't one of life's natural-born killers, and he knew it. For all the times he had fantasized about killing his cousin Thraken, from his teenage years right up to a few hours ago, he now wondered if he could actually aim a blaster at him in cold blood and pull the trigger. The man deserved it, but that didn't mean Han could do it. He was going to try, though. Jason had sent his parents an encrypted message. They'd caught Thraken's assassin because she made the mistake of looking for Han on Coruscant. Her name was Aelin Haber, and Jason assured him that she wasn't going to trouble him any longer. But she might have a female accomplice called Myrta Gave. Jason might have intercepted Haber, but there was another potential assassin out there. This woman Gave. And if there wasn't, then Thraken would just keep coming anyway, year after year. He'd blighted Han's life for as long as he could remember. Han found a good vantage point in the park overlooking the government offices and presidential residence. The GO, as Corellians now called it, was one large complex, a tasteful little village of colonnaded low-rise buildings in the classical style set in well-kept formal gardens. The park around it sloped gently up an artificial hill that provided a safe gradient for board skiing when it snowed. Han found a seat at the top of the hill and took out some breadsticks to chew on. Every bit the regular man having his lunch in the park.
Okay. He has his regular weekly press conference today, which means he has to be in his office either side of that slot. A nice grenade launcher. No, he'll have staff with him. It's not their fault their boss is a scumbag.
Han was just wondering if Leia had managed to get a hold of Jaina by comlink when he heard a sharp hiss, like a jet, and felt as if someone had run up behind him. He spun around and was face to face with a Mandalorian visor that he knew far, far too well.
Long time no see,
said Boba Fett, and Han went for his blaster without thinking. Fett brought Han down with a forearm smash under the chin and sent him sprawling. Han tasted blood in his mouth, and his head rang so hard he was convinced the sound was real and external. Getting hit by an armor plate was a lot harder to bounce back from than a bare fist. He shook his head to clear it and propped himself up on one arm. He was now staring into the sawn-off muzzle of an EE-3 blaster.
Every time I see you, that thing's got a few more gizmos added, said Han.
You make it sound like I pursue you.
You do.
Your glory days are long over, Solo.
Fett encouraged him to get up with a jab from his boot, blaster still aimed, and picked up Han's where it had fallen.
Nobody's put a decent price on your head for years. I'm after someone who matters.
Funny. I thought you'd taken Thraken's contract.
Shut up and give your ego a rest.
What are you here for, then?
Sightseeing. You want an audience?
Fett shoved him into the chaos of bricks and Durasteel that lay where it had been left, and towards a sight office. one of those temporary cabins that could get up and walk to a new position on their own repulsors. Fett bypassed the lock with something on his gauntlet and waved Han inside with his blaster.
"So what can I do for you?"
Han asked, settling on a chair covered in permacrete dust.
"Need another carbonite calf table for your hut buddies?"
"If I'd wanted you dead, I could have looked the other way when you had that spot of trouble with the Vong."
He still hadn't holstered his blaster.
"I need you as bait."
"Terrific.
No risk to you."
"It's the word bait I tend to notice."
"My daughter accepted Sal Solo's contract on your family. I shouldn't get in a fellow bounty hunter's way, but I need to find her, and you're the best way to do it."
Fett perched in the edge of a desk between Han and the door, one boot on the seat of a chair. He glanced toward the door as if waiting for someone to show up. Han calculated whether he'd be able to charge whoever came in and make a run for it before Fett fired, and he realized he couldn't. Then he heard rapid footsteps, too light for a man, and wondered if Leia was going to rescue him again. Her timing was usually great. But it wasn't Leia. A very young girl with short brown hair, cold dark eyes, and an earnest, humorless face ducked into the cabin and closed the doors. She was wearing armor. Not a full set like Fett, but armor all the same. And that meant another bounty hunter.
"She's still not answering," said the girl. "If she doesn't know Solo's here, she won't come."
"You don't usually work in a team."
Han was getting worried now.
"You need hired help these days?"
"This isn't a team. This is an arrangement."
"Okay. If I help you out, what's in it for me?"
"What do you want?"
It was worth a try, thought Han.
"Help me assassinate Thrak and Sal Solo."
Han could have sworn Fett actually sighed.
"Too late. One of his political rivals already booked me to do the job."
"Well, that's just great. Who? No, let me guess. Nice young man with dark hair. Durgedjian."
"Might be."
"He gave me a few tips on how to whack Thrakken too. Looks like he isn't sure I can do the job."
The girl stared at Han as if she'd have to clean him off her boots sooner or later.
"Can you?"
"It's not as easy as it looks, is it?"
"It is. Now, about my daughter."
Han thought about Jason's comlink message, which he had read several times but not answered. Bounty hunting was a small world. He took a chance.
"Is your daughter called Myrta Gave by any chance?"
The girl's hand went to her blaster as she fixed Han with an unblinking stare.
"I'm Myrta Gave, Granddad."
So this was it. It was Fett's double cross after all. He was working for Thrakken. Han decided to go for it.
"Just my criffing luck."
Han exploded out of the chair, head down, and charged the girl. She was a lot heavier than she looked, and that armor plate on her chest really hurt, but nowhere near as much as the stock of Fett's blaster against the back of his head. He fell on all fours, and the girl brought her knee up in his face just as he pitched forward. That hurt a lot, too.
"Solo, you forgot a few things since we last met."
Fett hauled him to his feet and shoved him back in the chair.
"Don't take on two bounty hunters at once. Now how come you know Myrta's name?"
"Why should I tell you?"
"Because I'm gonna kill your sleazebag cousin. Show some gratitude."
"My son says they picked up a hit woman in Galactic City called Aelin Haber, and that..."
"Osik!"
the girl hissed. Her face was instantly white and shocked.
"And if you're Myrta Gave, then you two might both be after me and my family."
"I'm not hunting you, old man."
Myrta was upset. That was clear.
"I was looking for Haber."
She took a breath.
"I recovered some items for her."
"She must owe you plenty, judging by the look on your face," said Han.
He looked at Fett, but a man with a helmet betrayed nothing. He was just very still.
"Aelin's my daughter,"
he said quietly, in a voice that sounded as if it belonged to a totally different man.
"Real name's Aelin Vel. So your son's got her, has he? I think I know the kind of job he does."
"She was cannoned up and ready to kill me, pal."
"I need to see her."
"Well, let me go and sort Thrakken, and I'll put in a good word for you with my boy. Maybe he can arrange visiting rights."
And maybe I'll tell your boy that he can pick his dad up in a body bag if he lays a finger on my daughter. Maybe I'll finish the job for her, because you're no use to me as bait now.
Looks like we're all stuck, said Han.
No South Solo, no contract on you.
Well, that's a win-win situation if I ever heard one.
Get your Jedi son to release my daughter.
If you let me have a crack at Thrakken, Han said.
I'm not splitting the bounty.
Just let me split his skull.
Deal.
Okay, deal.
Fett held out his hand to Myrta for her communicator.
Call your wife and tell her you've run into an old friend and that you're gonna be late getting home.
She'll sense something's wrong. She's got this Jedi danger sense.
Myrta Gave raised her blaster and held it to Han's head.
Can she bring people back from the dead, too?
Okay, point taken. I'll make it convincing.
Move it,
said Fett.
Don't want to miss the president's news conference. It's gonna be his last.
Slave One, Coronet City, Spaceport, Corellia.
How do you breathe in this thing?
Han grumbled.
Dry shaving in it, said Fett.
Han Solo adjusted the Mandalorian helmet with both hands. The spare armor that Fett kept stowed in Slave One as a backup was just what he needed to get them right up close to Sal Solo.
I can't see, said Han.
Fett activated the heads-up display.
Whoa, what is all this?
Han put his hand on the bulkhead as if he were falling over.
I can't balance.
Data display and 360-degree vision.
Fett shut down most of the feeds and the blink-operated controls so that Han saw only what he'd see with his own eyes.
Never worn a helmet?
Yeah, but I don't recall stormtrooper helmets being quite this fancy inside.
That's cheapskate defense procurement for you. Try walking.
Han paced up and down the narrow galley in Slave One's cargo section, turning his head left and right.
Okay, I can do this, said Han. I can see well enough to blow his brains out. So explain this to me.
We just walk in and ask to see your cousin. Then we get him on his own. Then we kill him.
Then I kill him.
I agreed to kill him, and I will.
Fett didn't have time for this.
You can take a shot, too, if it makes you feel better.
And he's just gonna let you stroll in?
Yes. He asked for some Mandalorian assistance. I said we'd think about it. I thought.
What assistance?
Defending Centerpoint.
But you took a contract to assassinate him,
Han said.
Gedgen made me an offer, and I accepted. I didn't accept South Salos. My man and my word. A contract is a contract.
So we pose as your Mandalorian henchmen.
He'll want to see us.
How do we find our way around? It's a maze in those offices.
Already done the recce and recorded the data.
Fett projected the holo plans of the presidential offices onto the cargo bay bulkhead.
Getting in is easy. Next two stages are getting him on his own, because I don't like collateral damage. And getting out again.
Can't Gedgen help you do that?
How's he gonna explain a dead president?
Myrta looked up. He'll blame it on the Alliance, because that's very handy for him.
She's good, said Han.
Either way, we get out fast. I suggest we exit via this route to his bunker, which leads to his tunnel that comes out in the park.
Fett traced the illuminated transparent chart with the finger of his glove, and considered how bad a firefight might get if they were trapped in that tunnel. Myrta only had a small bag with her. That meant not much kit. Not enough kit.
You want a helmet, girl?
No.
You'd better be fast, then.
Han stared at the chart, seeming more comfortable with the confines of the helmet.
Thrakken's got a bunker?
Civil Emergency Center. He's got direct access from his office.
You don't trust him either.
He has no honor, but that's irrelevant.
I don't think I'll ever understand you, Fett. You kill without blinking, and yet you're taking an awfully big risk to find a daughter who's tried to vape you.
He's all heart, really, said Myrta.
I must be, because you're still alive.
Galactic Alliance Ship Ocean, Alliance Third Fleet, Corellian Exclusion Zone, Day 6 of the Blockade.
Well, that's going to make life interesting for Omis,
said the hologram of Admiral Nyathol. A line of vessels, some freighters, some individual warships, some starfighters, and some whose profiles didn't match anything Jason had ever seen, had formed up in line astern a Corellian cruiser, Bloodstripe, at 50 kilometers from the Alliance picket blockading Corellia. The ops room crew of the Ocean watched the unmoving ranks of lights on the scanner. The commander of the Third Fleet, Admiral Macon, another Mon Cal with an unflinching approach to warfare, stood beside the hologram of Nyathol with his arms folded. Macon turned to face the image of Nyathol.
May I have confirmation of orders, ma'am? Maintain the exclusion zone and deny access to all vessels. And if an Alliance vessel is fired upon or otherwise threatened, then you may engage.
Colonel Solo, said Macon, put Rogue Squadron on alert 5.
Awaiting your orders, sir.
Let's see who blinks first this time.
Jason made his way to the hangar deck, where a row of XJ-7s stood with canopies open and ground technicians running pre-flight checks. Jaina and Zek were leaning against a bulkhead talking in hushed voices, and Jason chose not to use his force senses to listen. Jaina greeted him with a hostile stare and a definite sense of pushing him away in the force.
Good of you to drop in, Colonel Solo, she said.
His instant commission had really irked her.
Who's minding the shop back at the secret police HQ?
Zek greeted him with a nod. Now, Jaina, we have a guest star. Be nice. Jason chose not to take offense.
Mission brief, people.
Some other fleets have fronted up on behalf of Corellia, some of them civilian vessels. They're lined up, daring us to take a crack at them. We've been watching the scanner repeater. Zek nodded in the direction of the bulkhead, where a large holoscreen mirrored the tactical information from the ops room. This is going to get tricky. One wrong move,
and we suck in a lot more enemies.
Jaina completed Zek's sentence, a holdover from their time as joiners.
Do we have orders to engage?
Jason could feel her mistrust and sorrow.
Only if fired upon or placed under serious threat.
Three XJ-7s didn't constitute a major confrontation, but Jason was clear how far he would allow things to proceed. This was another game that could easily escalate. The three starfighters came up well under the line of assorted vessels and looped around to take up positions between them and the Alliance picket ships. Moving to intercept meant a fast dash, but that was what the XJ-7s were made for. Jason watched his cockpit console display for movement. One of the Fondorian fighters eased out of the line and passed Bloodstripe. It advanced slowly towards Zek, who was holding position on Jason's starboard wing.
Steady, said Zek.
The Fondorian slowed almost to a halt, and then suddenly peeled off to one side. Zek matched its maneuver instantly and harried it for 10 kilometers at close range until it swung around and headed back to the line behind Bloodstripe. Now all the vessels pulled forward to form a line level with the Corellian cruiser.
They're going to go for it, Zek, said Jaina.
Yeah, I feel it. Here we go.
Jason said nothing. Bloodstripe didn't move, but the ships to either side of her did. They spread farther apart, and for a moment, he wondered if they were simply going to try to draw Alliance ships away.
Hold steady, said Jason. Then, the Atzeri freighter picked up speed and came straight at them. Jason had it on visual now. It was an old ship and lightly armed to deter piracy, but it was picking up speed.
He's coming right at you, Jaina, said Jason. If he hasn't changed his mind at 2 kilometers, give him a reminder who's in charge here.
I'll buzz him. You be careful, said Zek.
The freighter showed no signs of slowing.
That's close enough, said Jaina,
and edged forward to skim over the freighter's casing, nearly shaving its antennae. The freighter didn't waver.
He needs another reminder, said Jason, and set off after Jaina to block the freighter's path.
Bonitan cruiser braking on the far side.
Zek's voice was a whisper.
Leave that to me.
The cruiser was a legitimate target. It was an armed warship. The Atzeri freighter, though, needed more careful handling. Firing on a civilian vessel was a political risk,
not a military one. Jason set a head-on course for the freighter's long panel of viewports set across the width of its nose. Jaina had looped back and was making a second pass to block the ship.
Blink, said Jason.
The freighter held its course.
Go on, blink.
They were on a collision course. It wasn't high speed, but in space, even a low-velocity collision could be disastrous.
Don't play this game with me, friend, Jason said.
He could now see the figures moving on the freighter's brightly lit bridge. He was close enough to see the color of their overalls. If he didn't pull up in 20 seconds, he'd be dead.
10 seconds.
Jason surrendered himself to instinct. He jerked the controls and the XJ-7 climbed high and fast, just as the freighter made a last-second dip below the plane of collision. Jason knew he had missed the hull by meters. When he reached the top of his climb, he looked down and saw that the freighter's aft ports had opened. Small laser cannons were trained on him. Not all ships had their armament mounted forward. Freighters expected sometimes to be chased in pirate-infested space lanes.
Got you, said Jaina. Jason, I'm targeting their cannons.
There was a staccato exchange of white and blue streams of fire beneath Jason as he arced down into a dive and came up behind Jaina. The freighter fired again, and then Jaina was clear of the stream and coming about for a second time. Jason watched one cannon mounting shatter and break into a shower of shimmering particles, and then the other. The freighter slowed and began to turn. Jason sent a one-word message to Jaina in the Force. Fire.
Finish it, Jaina. I've disabled both aft cannons. He's heading back.
He opened fire. Do it. You know the rules of engagement.
I won't do it. It's a civilian vessel, and right now he isn't presenting a threat.
That's an order.
It's outside the ROE.
It's legitimate. I repeat, take him out.
Colonel Solo, I'm refusing that order.
Jason lined up the icons on his console and sent a spread of 5 torpedoes into the freighter. A ball of gold light plumed from the starboard side of the freighter's hull. Then another, and another. And suddenly, half its flank was in fragments and hitting ships alongside. The line flanking Bloodstripe broke and scattered. On his screen, Jason saw the pinpoint images of small lifeboat ships disgorging from the cruiser to go to the freighter's aid. Half of the ship had blown away.
Rogue Squadron, bang out now!
Resolute's commander cut in.
We're opening fire! Get out of there!
Jason dropped immediately under Resolute's arc of fire and headed back to Ocean, picking up Zek and Jaina as he went. He could feel Jaina's fury as she trailed him in silence. Zek opened the comlink.
Anyone want to tell me what happened back there? Jaina, why did you break off?
Jason answered for her.
Colonel Solo refused a direct order, he said carefully.
It broke his heart, but he had no choice.
My sister, I've really lost her now.
She's now suspended from duty.
Presidential Offices, Coronet Corellia, 1830 hours.
Do take a seat, said Thrakken Sal Solo. I wasn't expecting to see you back so soon.
The doors to the office were open, and a couple of Sal Solo's staff sat at desks in the adjoining room. Fett perched on the edge of one of the fine brocade chairs and motioned to Han to sit down. Myrta simply stood to one side, arms folded.
Did you have second thoughts?
Asked Sal Solo.
Just seeking clarification,
Fett said. He noted the position of the door that led to the emergency bunker.
Can we discuss this in private?
How private?
Is this room soundproofed?
Yes.
Then shut the doors and give your staff the rest of the evening off.
For a man like Sal Solo, it wasn't an unusual request. The doors closed, and they were as alone with Sal Solo as they ever were likely to be.
Tell me again what you have in mind for Centerpoint.
He rested his hand on his blaster rifle. He always carried it rather than sling it across his shoulder. Sal Solo seemed unperturbed by it. Myrta didn't take her eyes off him. Han was silent, but visibly tense.
Once Corellian forces breach the blockade, we can resupply the station with technical equipment and reactivate it. We'd hope to position your men inside to stop further sabotage. It's a huge station to make intruder-proof.
Like I said, 1 million credits per man per month.
Fett counted the seconds. Han twitched.
Cheaper than an army, I suppose,
Thrakken said at last.
100 Mandalorians is an army,
said Fett. And then Han leapt up from the edge of his seat and slammed across Sal Solo's desk, knocking him flat into the wall and upending his chair. Sal Solo pulled a holdout blaster from his jacket while they struggled, and Han headbutted him. The blaster went flying. Han pulled off his helmet with one hand and had his cousin by the throat.
You scum!
Fett launched himself across the desk and pinned Sal Solo down.
Just do it, Solo, he snapped. Kill him, or I will. It's not sport.
Myrta covered the doors with her blaster. At least the girl knew what she was doing.
I've waited years for this, Fett.
Make it fast, then.
Fett assumed Han wanted to make his cousin suffer before he killed him, which was sloppy. But then family feuds were always too emotionally charged.
Remember what you agreed.
Han had a stranglehold on Sal Solo's throat. The man's eyes bulged.
Never again, you scumbag.
He dug his fingers into the skin.
You never mess with me or my family again!
Sal Solo found a defiant, strangled voice.
You think the bounty hunter I decoyed you all with on Coruscant is the only one hunting you?
What do you mean?
Fett grabbed Han's wrist to stop him choking Sal Solo before he answered.
What decoy?
I tipped them off about her. Too busy following her to worry about the others. They're coming, Han, and you don't know how many. You'll never be able to sleep soundly again.
Aelin, you set up Aelin. You used my little girl.
Back off, Solo. He's mine,
said Fett, and held the blaster to Sal Solo's head.
No, he's mine,
said Myrta, and rolled across the desk to fire 3 bolts into Sal Solo's forehead.
It was a split second of total silence.
And then 2 seconds of chaos. Han was cursing that he'd been cheated. Fett put 2 rounds into Sal Solo to be sure he'd finished him.
You should learn to shoot first, Solo,
said Fett.
Now get down that passage fast. Run for it.
But I wanted to take him, for all he's done to me.
Go on then, put a few more through him. Have your vengeance. Then shut up and get moving.
The room might have been soundproofed, but the sound of blaster fire could penetrate a long way. Fett wasn't sure Han could do it, but Sal Solo was dead already, and Han no longer had to face shooting him in cold blood. At last he fired. Fett grabbed him and shoved him through the door to the passage as Myrta retrieved the spare helmet. They ran down a single flight of steps into a long passage lit by yellow emergency lamps. Fett's helmet sensors picked up movement 2 rooms above. Running feet. Someone was coming. He took the full set of security blades out of his pocket and set their interference pattern to block all comlinks except his own. This wasn't the time to let anyone call for backup. Then he shoved Han ahead of him and forced him to run. The fool was still staring back at his cousin's body.
Now my side of the bargain, Solo,
Fett panted as they ran.
My daughter. I have to see my daughter.
Lumaya's apartment, safe house, Galactic City.
Jason rubbed his eyes, trying to erase the dream he'd had on the flight back from Corellia, and that was still vivid in his mind. He hoped it was a dream and not a vision. As the turbolift climbed to the 300th floor of the apartment tower, he tried to shake the image from his mind and failed. In the dream, he was staring at his hands, lightsaber clutched in one, sobbing. That was your dream of when you send your own sister for court-martial. Deal with it. No, he wasn't proud of what he'd done to Jaina, but it had to be done. He let the misery wash over him and didn't flinch from it as he opened the doors of Lumaya's safehouse apartment with a brief focus of force energy. Inside was a surprisingly comfortable suite of rooms, scattered with objects that he thought he recognized from her asteroid habitat.
You're very upset,
she said, emerging from another room. Jason was startled by her appearance.
Your grandfather found me drifting in my starfighter after Luke Skywalker had fired on it and left me for dead. Vader saved me, so my life is inextricably linked with your family. Did you know that? You see that as destiny. Inevitably.
which is why you should stop feeling guilty about your sister.
I'm having bad dreams about it. I wasn't expecting that.
Do you want them to stop?
No. They are what they are. I have to embrace them.
Be sure you know the fine line between dreams and visions. They may tell you what you need to know, what I can't tell you.
Which is?
How you progress from where you are now to what you have to become. I can guide you in techniques, but their application must come from you.
Jason sat down, careful not to touch any artifacts in case one had a use he didn't yet know. This is what I don't understand. I spent over 5 years perfecting my use of the Force, learning techniques from all species, not just the Jedi way. What more can there be? Where does a Jedi adept end and a Sith begin? You see, I never really believed that it was purely a line between good and evil. Some days, I can't even define those terms.
It's acceptance,
said Lumaya.
The willingness to surrender to what the Force asks of you. To stop denying it by rationalizing denial as self-discipline and avoidance of powerful emotions.
That sounds as if I should simply do the first thing that comes into my mind.
You already know you should.
Why am I different from my grandfather, then? The more I do, the more I feel I'm doing exactly as he did. Was it really only his preoccupation with his wife that stopped him achieving order?
He started his training too late and was still inexperienced when he was exploited by a man who wanted power. You're a mature man with a lifetime's training, and nobody is using you. You won't make the same mistakes.
It can't be that easy.
It won't be. It will be painful.
More painful than turning on your own sister?
Oh, yes.
That's my destiny?
That's the price you pay for bringing order to the galaxy. This is your sacrifice. Now do you see why weak men like Palpatine saw only power, and why they were defeated? There is nothing in it for you as Jason Solo.
What should I do next?
I can't tell you. Deal with what troubles you most.
My apprentice, Ben. He's wavering.
Don't seek his approval.
I don't.
Don't set an example and hope that he'll follow it. Put him in a position where he has to discover the truth for himself.
Emergency Management Complex under Kevin Park, Coronet, Corellia.
For a couple of old guys, Han thought, he and Fett were keeping up with the girl pretty well. Then he realized that the underground passage sloped downhill. The corridor that ran from Sal Solo's presidential suite to the emergency management bunker stretched for a kilometer under Kevin Park. All they had to do was keep running.
Where does this come out?
Han panted.
Leads into the bunker complex, then two exits out of there to the surface.
Two?
Two exits are always better than one.
A long way behind, but not far enough, pounding boots echoed.
We're not gonna run into company ahead, are we?
Not unless we're really unlucky.
Fett pounded along behind Myrta.
They only staff these places in civil emergencies.
Like a war?
Yeah, that'd qualify.
Myrta had her blaster held at shoulder level as she sprinted, a testimony to the benefits of unfashionably flat boots and sensible clothing.
They'll have a real emergency on their hands if they get in the way.
Doors ahead of them opened automatically, and bright lights flared into life on the ceiling. If this was all set to trigger when staff entered, then they had to be alone down here, or the lights would already be on. Alone, except for the guards chasing them, of course. Had to be guards. Han was tuned to the sound of guards' boots. Fett came to a halt as they entered a lobby with six doors leading from it. Three were marked traffic control, water and power, and central EM cell. The other three weren't marked at all.
Which one?
Said Han. Myrta stepped behind them, blaster sweeping an arc, while Fett froze. Han realized he was focusing on some display in his helmet's HUD.
Two exits via the main EM room here. But if we get stuck, there are hatches to accessible vents from the other rooms.
He indicated his jetpack.
I don't do vents.
EM room, here we come.
The running footsteps behind were much, much louder now. A bolt of blaster fire spattered plaster 10 meters from them. Fett broke off and extended his left arm,
sending a long jet of flame down the passage behind them that made a loud wahoo sound and blew billows of gray smoke back at them. Curses and shouts rang down the passage. The flamethrower had slowed their pursuers, but not stopped them.
Move it.
The EM door didn't open automatically. Myrta hit the heel of her hand on the square red key at the side a couple of times, and the doors parted. They were already halfway into the room before Han realized that it was full of desks and rows with comlinks on each of them. The walls were covered completely in holo maps and display boards. The place was ready to handle whatever disaster hit Coronet when the warning siren sounded. A bewildered man in a white shirt looked up from a data pad and stared at them.
"You're early," he said. "We weren't due to staff the..."
Oh, boy.
A blue streak of blaster fire spat from the doorway, and Han, Fett, and Myrta fired at the same time, driving back two security guards. The man ducked, arms covering his head, while they traded blaster bolts, and Fett shot out the door's lock panel, sending the two halves slamming shut.
"Health and safety inspection," said Han, as the terrified man flattened himself against the wall. "Keep up the good work."
They burst through one of the two doors marked emergency exit and were back in a yellow-lit corridor again, running for their lives.
"Your jetpack isn't going to be much use to you down here, pal," said Han.
Fett didn't break his pace. He got to the end of the passage and spun around, nearly knocking Han against the wall. Then he bent forward at 90 degrees to the ground, hunched his shoulders, and tapped at the panel on his left forearm.
"You reckon?"
he said, breathless.
"Mind the back war, Solo."
A swoosh of hot air and blinding flash of yellow light nearly flattened Han as the small missile on Fett's jetpack skimmed the back of his helmet and shot down the corridor, trailing vapor. Fett grabbed Han's shoulder and shoved him ahead.
"You know how much these MM9s cost?"
Fett grumbled. Han's ears were ringing.
"There's gotta be safety regulations on that thing."
They ran. Ahead, a patch of light that was brighter than the yellow gloom of the tunnel kept Han running at an automatic animal level.
"Escape. Just escape. Worry about everything else later."
He'd expected Myrta to be halfway across the park by now, but she was standing by the exit doors, pumping blaster fire into them until they parted. Cool evening air washed into the musty passage. The tunnel emerged in the slope of another artificial hill on the far side of the park. "All clear," she said. "Go on, run!" Myrta didn't strike him as the type to care whether he lived or died. But like Fett, she had her reasons for wanting him in one piece. Fett could have left them both stranded and escaped with his jetpack, but he didn't let Han out of his sight.
"Call your wife. Get her to pick us up. We can't run all over Coronet at this time of night. Too conspicuous."
They crouched in the cover of thick bushes near the highway. Han opened the comlink.
"Hi, honey," said Han. "Can you give us a lift?"
Leia's voice was, as usual, all resigned calm.
"Who's us?"
"Some Mandalorian buddies I ran into."
"That's nice. I'm watching a lot of police activity from the apartment."
"Ah, that'd be Cousin Thrakken."
"How is he?"
"Dead," said Han, his stomach torn between nausea and a lifetime's worth of relief. "Very, very dead."